Hello and welcome to the BSG podcast. I am your host, Chase, and today we're going to be reviewing Sekiro, my probably second most favorite game of all time, just below Bloodborne. Spoiler.
Oh, no Final Fantasies on the list. Everyone keep note.
Yeah, keep note. Final Fantasy is great as a series, my favorite series, but definitely this is my second favorite game. And with me to talk about this is that guy you heard is Quinn. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. If you don't know who we are, we're an informative bi-weekly podcast focused on gaming news and discussions. On Mondays, we go over the news for the week, covering everything gaming without the BS. And on Wednesdays, we pick up a juicy topic or gaming review, like today, and give our half-informed opinions. What's the review going to look like, Chase?
It's going to look pretty fucking awesome because this game is got some really good gameplay, and that's probably going to be where we're going to talk a lot about, along with the story. The story is just quite wonderful. Like, I know I'm spoiling a little bit of the review, but this game is an awesome game. It's just how awesome is the question. And so if you want to talk to us about your experience with Sekiro, you should review us. You should go on Twitter at BS Gamers Podcast and give your opinions. My God, this game is awesome. I want to hear it. I also even want to hear how much trouble and how much hatred you have toward this game because it just kept killing you over and over and over and over.
Also, thing to point out is that Chase might be saying this game is awesome, but I also played the game and I have my own opinion. So...
yes.
There will be a battle of the wits here.
Let's do this. I'm excited.
What Sekiro is and if it should be praised or not. Like Chase briefly mentioned that if you want to do us a solid, in addition to talking to us on Twitter, you can also review us on whichever platform of podcast you are listening to currently. And if you want to give us a poor review, we do have a suggestion. If you would like to... help us, you can actually criticize us on Twitter. Tell us what we could do better on Twitter before leaving that review, and we will hopefully change those bad habits. And maybe after that, you could give us a positive review.
All right. That sounds like something that needs to happen in the future. Let's get into this review.
Let's go.
All right. So Sekiro was released March 22nd, 2019, one day before Quinn's birthday, and I bought it for him. It was developed by From Software and published by Activision on all platforms. The game was in development starting just after the release of Bloodborne's DLC, The Old Hunters, in late 2015. And interesting enough, I didn't know this is something that happens, is that it was self-published in Japan by From Software, but in Asia Pacific, it was published by Cube Game, and everywhere else, it was on Activision. So an interesting... interesting thing right there.
Also, so some more information. Sekiro draws inspiration from the action stealth game Tenchu, which was partially developed and published by From Software. The game takes place during the Sengoku period of Japan, although all of the people in history are completely fictional. Sekiro means one-armed wolf in Japanese and was going to be the original name of the game until Activision requested the slogan Shadows Die Twice on the teaser trailer name to be added to the game's name. So it is Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice.
On release day, Sekiro drew over 108,000 concurrent players on Steam, third highest of any Japanese game in the platform's history, behind only Monster Hunter World and another From Software game, Dark Souls 3. Within 10 days of its release, over 2 million copies were sold worldwide. And as of August 2019, this game has sold 3.8 million copies.
Looks pretty good.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the graphics. So why don't you start, Quinn?
Well, it's pretty apparent and obvious that Sekiro runs off the same engine as Dark Souls 3. Everything in the game looks pretty identical. Like, if you replaced Sekiro, the main character, or Wolf, or what is his name, Wolf?
His name was given to him Wolf because he was an orphan.
Right.
Or Sekiro is like his real name, I think. I don't know. It's very confusing, but which one's which. But I think Wolf is his real name.
Right. So Wolf, if you just replaced him with a medieval Dark Souls player character, it would look like you wouldn't bat an eye. It would look normal because the engine looks pretty much exactly the same. And all the textures and detail on objects is done in a very similar way where it feels... like and looks like a Souls game. Or at least like Dark Souls 3 in particular, because that's their newest engine.
Yes. So if you compared it to like Bloodborne, Bloodborne took the Victorian era or this Lovecraftian style. And then in this game, it's the Japanese Sengoku era style. So it's like literally you just change Bloodborne to Japanese era or Dark Souls.
Whichever. Well, Dark Souls 3, I think, is the better example since it's the most recent. Right. But also it's interesting because I think Bloodborne is... The theme is way more apparent. I feel like in Sekiro, it's there, but there's actually sections in Dark Souls games that look more Asian in theme. Definitely so it true. wasn't as much of a jump in my head, you know. So like that's why in my head relating it to Dark Souls 3 feels more natural than like relating Bloodborne to a Souls game because they're so far apart in theme.
Right. The reason I compare it to a little bit of Bloodborne is because it has a lot... It feels a little bit darker. Like, when you play Dark Souls, it does get dark. And by any means, I'm not trying to say that. But it gets a lot brighter as well in Dark Souls. Whereas I found, for the most part, the Sekiro game is pretty dark and gritty. Going around, the buildings are pretty dark. The only exception are these two areas, which are, you know, very important. You got the temple and then the divine realm. When you go up there, then they're pretty colorful. But other than that, it's pretty dark and gritty, kind of like a Bloodborne game. As for like other parts of the graphics, I mean, it looks really good. I would consider it like a double A level of graphics. I don't know how you would compare it to Control, since we are playing that right now. I think Control's graphics are a little bit better. Would you agree to that? Disagree?
I think the graphics in Sekiro when it came out felt like a double A slash triple A title in terms of graphical quality.
Yeah, it's still good. I'm not in any way. It's still really good. But like, I know that there are games I can think of that look just a little bit better. Just a little bit.
Right. But I think the comparison to Control is like unfair because Control is very like the lines are very sharp and everything's very like polygonal, like the design of the game and the map.
Yeah, it has a different aesthetic for sure.
Right. The aesthetic is very particular and looks a lot cleaner than Japan, I guess.
Yeah.
Than just like every part of Japan. So
it just felt like some of like I know this is getting really specific, but like looking at the hair, it just seemed a little bit, I guess, what would you call it? Like rectangly, you could say. It doesn't feel like it, like each strand.
It wasn't very dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah. That felt a little weak. But I mean, it's not. And when I say that it's not good, I'm just saying that it could have been sharper, but it's not something that detracts from the game. At all.
Right. I think in addition to this, I guess keep this in mind, right? Keep that there isn't, it doesn't feel 100% polished. It feels pretty close. It's like 98% or something. But there is like a level of polish that feels missing from the graphical side of things.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind when I want to compare this later gameplay wise to like Dark Souls 3, for example.
Okay.
Because there's something I want to say specifically. Okay. Anyways, in terms of the UI, also comparing it to Dark Souls 3, it's pretty much the same information, except now you have like posture damage, but you still have your items, you have experience, you have your health bar, and posture is pretty much stamina. You have like a new thing, which is more similar to Bloodborne, where in Bloodborne you had bullets, and now you have
shurikens and whatnot.
Shurikens and well, the currency for those attacks, I forgot what it's called. It's like those little symbols.
Spirit emblems.
Spirit emblems, right, instead of bullets. So, there's no surprises in my mind of the UI and the graphics.
Yeah, it's very similar to Dark Souls. Yeah, it's different at the same time in terms of, like, does it look exactly like Dark Souls thing? No, but does it look like the archetype? Yes, for sure. And that's good in a lot of ways, because I think, honestly, Dark Souls setup with its UI is pretty good. It's not completely covering the screen, but it's just enough that it's like, these are the things that you need to know.
Right.
the only thing I think that's different isn't Dark Souls 3 and or at least 2. They do like the four-pronged thing where you press up, down, left, right to get to your item.
Right.
So they don't do that in Sekiro, and maybe this is just like a maybe this is more polished. I don't know. I'd have to hear your opinion, Quinn. You can like scroll through some items that you have pre-placed. So I think you have like 6 that you can set up in your menu, and so you can scroll through those. And you can even, if like let's say your first item is the most important, you can hold the right button, I believe. And then it'll go straight back to the first item.
So right, it will auto jump to the beginning.
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty good design in that UI thing. Just, I mean, I know that's a little bit more gameplay-esque, but that I like that design within the game. And then it nicely just goes to each item.
Right.
But yeah.
I mean, I think it serves the same purpose. You know, like there is that little added touch of like holding down the button, but I think it serves the same purpose.
Yeah, would you say that maybe it's a little bit more polished with the menu system, how it looks and whatnot, or are they not completely comparable?
I think they're not comparable because also in the Dark Souls games, you can equip more than one weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can also swap between weapons. I know you have like your arm things in Sekiro that you can swap between, but I feel like there's a lot more...
Yeah, there's no weapon customization in this game.
Not only that, but in Dark Souls, you can have one weapon per arm, and you have 2 menus for each weapon's or each arm's weapons. Mm-hmm. And Sekiro, it's all, the only thing you're swapping between is items and your mechanical arm weapons, essentially, or shinobi weapons is what they're called, right? So I feel like they're
whatever
different.
You want to call them,
prosthetic tools. Weapons, shinobi abilities, whatever.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a little bit more you have to do, or a little bit more you have to be able to do in Dark Souls. So I think they do that really well, and I think Sekiro does its menu system really well, and they're both very similar.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to leave the graphics, or do you want to add anything else to it? I mean, there.
We're at the moment we talk about it, the closer we get to gameplay. So I think before we do that, let's jump into story a little bit.
Okay. So, during the Sengoku era, this is the story, by the way. This is like the general story, and then we'll go a little bit more into the actual things that happen a little bit more. But this is kind of like to understand the entirety of the game. So, during the Sengoku era, Ashina is at the height of its power and has taken over the realm with its military might. However, the leader, Ashina Ishin, falls ill due to old age. Hence, Ashina's might seems to be at an end. So the grandson of Ishin, Genichiro, who's pretty much your main antagonist in the entire game, under the pressure of losing his grandfather and Ashina's grip of the realm, searches for the divine heir, Kuro, who is your side pal, who possesses the ability of those in service to him, immortality. Kuro is appalled by his bloodline and has the player, Wolf, you go on a journey to collect divine items that would sever Kuro's ties from his dragon heritage. So that is the main plot of the game. Your goal as the player, Wolf, is to collect essentially some items to get rid of this immortality thing because everyone wants it.
And partially, Wolf is immortal because of his ties to Kuro.
Right. I think he drank his blood or something like that.
If you get the dragon blood, then you become immortal.
And so a lot of people are desiring this. You'll find out in the game that there are other ways of getting immortality, but all of them have a cost to pay.
Yeah.
One of them being the worms that we'll talk about later, where they give you immortality, but, they essentially eat you from the inside out. And so you're like a living corpse, you could say. Anyways. So when you first started this game, Quinn, how did you feel about it? Did you feel like you understood stuff more so than Dark Souls? Or was it just as non-linear? What do you think about it so far?
No, there are definitely more informative cutscenes, I guess, at the beginning.
100% agree.
of what's going on and setting the scene of what the story is and what's going to be taking place. Like, it does a lot more to explain, okay, this is Wolf's story, right? Like, because in Dark Souls games and in Bloodborne, it's the player's story. It's hard to, and maybe like on purposely, it's better to give general vague things so that the player can craft their own story. While when you're playing a character like Wolf, you have a specific story you're going for, or I guess three specific stories in this context. But because of that, you need to have more blatant information dropped on the player,
mm-hmm.
to give them a motive to go play as Wolf through his story.
Right. This is definitely so more like, of a narrative than
right. Just it's being definitely a more of a narrative, and I think they do a better job.
Yeah.
I could use a little bit more information, but you know, for FromSoft, this is more than they've ever
this
done.
This is a heck of a lot more. Yeah, there's some stuff you don't learn unless you really dive in, just like any other Souls game.
Right.
But you do actually, like, what I wrote up top was more or less, I mean, I did look it up to double check, of course.
Right.
But it was more or less my idea of what was happening. So, like, when you start the game, I mean, it's really cool. You have a huge fight scene. Well, there's some other stuff, like you find out you're an orphan and stuff, but like the biggest thing that happens is you have a huge fight scene with Genichiro. So you meet your main antagonist of the game.
Right.
And he most likely, it's very rare that you'd beat him on your very first try, beats the living shit out of you, and then you get your arm cut off, and that's how you start your story with getting your prosthetic arm.
Right.
And the reason you didn't die was because you're immortal, actually. And so that's why you actually survived the bout. And,
right. And you're immortal because Kuro gives you the dragon blood, yeah. Essentially making you immortal.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's this, like, 13-year-old little kid that just has, yeah. Who's known as the divine heir, who lives forever and can give people powers.
Like, so I think this is just similar to how Japan worked, you know, like in Japan you had the royalty, but essentially whoever was highest in the military was considered the ruler of Japan, even though you had the divine family
right.
living side, but basically side by side with the military force.
Yeah, they were going to make him a puppet in the end is right. What they were planning on doing. So he was
right.
The military was going to be in power, but he was going to be a puppet to, I guess, what do you say, like bring
to just give the power, realm. Basically like making that family, Genichiro's family, formally giving them control mm-hmm. over Japan.
Yeah.
And that's totally what Japanese history is like for a lot of a lot of this period.
So one of the things that happens is you meet your stepfather, how would you consider it, your adopted father. So sure. His name is Owl. He has a name. It's like Uzaimon or something like that, or somewhere along the line. But he adopts you and trains you to be a shinobi for...
So this is also a flashback. So what's happening is the game introduces you to the game, gets you through the tutorial, then you fight Genichiro, and then you get fucked over, and then it takes you back to introduce you to, like, I believe, like, other mechanics, right? And yeah. So it's like a... It's a flashback to some more tutorial stuff where it talks about how Al was like this insane shinobi character guy. Like he was the best of the best and he adopts Wolf after there's like this war zone basically and Wolf is still alive and he's a child.
So there was a battle between the Ashina and the Takeru clan and this is how Ashina got its power 20 years ago. And so then because of that, Sekiro... goes into like the Iron Code and becomes a shinobi under the Divine Heir.
Right. And his only mission in life is to basically protect the Divine Heir and do whatever he bids.
So you wake up and you find that you have a prosthetic arm now, and this is where you get your abilities such as like the grappling hook and etc. And you get it from this guy named Sekijo. Who's a sculptor, and a one-armed sculptor, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, why is he a one-armed sculptor? So Sekijo means barren, sterile woman. So it's a little odd name. And so he's a shinobi with one arm, and he gives you a prosthetic arm. So this was his prior prosthetic arm that he used to use.
Right. As a carver, I think he carved himself a prosthetic arm and then he gave it to you.
Yeah. He was, you find out later that he was actually a genius shinobi.
Right.
Who worked under Ashina, who even fought Ashina Inshin, the like huge big bad guy at the end of the game.
Right.
And I'll go into that maybe later in the story, but he plays an important role in giving the prosthetic arm to Sekiro and as well as upgrading his items.
He also kind of serves as like a mentor in a lot of ways, like mm-hmm. basically guiding the player to like what you need to do next in a little bit of a sense, and also like giving you the ability to like meditate and upgrade things, and basically he serves as almost like the hub character in a way.
Yeah. So you have to meet him a lot. You also meet Emma, who is the doctor to Ashina Ishin as well. But she also helps you with, I guess, giving you better healing abilities, whatnot. But
she's also investigating just how the dragon blood works.
Right. So there's this thing called the dragon rot, which essentially every time you revive yourself, so you have this ability to be able, because you're an immortal, you revive yourself. Every time you revive yourself, you hurt others around you, and it's known as the dragon rot. And so you, she's
basically suck some life out of them to keep you alive.
Exactly. So going a little bit past that, so there's like a lot of stuff that happens in this part of the game, but really it's a lot of fluff. It's more like just learning the mechanics of the game. And the first big thing that happens is that you're attempting to find Kuro, and you find him in the hands of Genichiro. Genichiro has taken him over, and he's asking, more like begging or forcibly begging him to make him immortal in order to keep Ashina's might, right?
Right.
And so
it's essentially, he can't like force Kuro to do anything, but he's like, make the Ashina clan your shinobis, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, make us, put us under you.
Make us your immortal army.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I gotta ask this. Did you ever beat Genichiro at this point?
No. At this point?
No. So, yeah, he's a motherfucker. He's definitely the first time in the game where it really upscales beyond its normal means, for sure.
Right. The curve here, the skill curve, really jumps up at this fight. And what is this fight? Like a third of the way through the process, you think?
Yeah, I would say about that. There's still a lot to cover after that. You could go elsewhere for a little bit.
Right, and kind of explore to sidetrack from the fact that you keep dying.
But you have to beat this guy in order to move on at some point. Because you need to meet with Kuro, who gives you the second big quest of the game, which is to collect items to sever the immortality. So this guy's a fuck, you know. And he's really strong. Like his third phase, and what I'll talk about later, is fucking nuts too. But arguably, it's a lot easier than the first two phases.
Oh, okay.
No, the first two phases are really fucking hard. It's the last phase of this guy, as well as the final boss in the game. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier. All the other ones are really fucking hard. The last two are easy though, which is sad. And I'll get to that later in the gameplay. But so you fight him, then you go to Kuro. He asks you to collect some items. And basically you go to different villages and areas where you have to collect certain items which allow you to sever the immortality. Now, once you finally collect just about everything except for the dragon tears, you know, nothing really matters. None of the stuff really gives you anything special. You just have to collect them. Mm-hmm. You find out that Owl, your adopted father, is alive. Still kicking after 20 years. He looked old already when you saw him 20 years ago.
Yeah.
He's fucking archaic now. And he tells you, hey, I want to become immortal. I want you to force Kuro to give it to me. Okay? And so you're given a decision either to follow the Iron Code and stick with Owl, or forsake it and stick with Kuro. So that's a very interesting point. Like, they give you, so this is the first ending, is you can decide to which path to take. Now, if you go with Owl and follow the Iron Code, you have to fight one of the hardest bosses in the game, which I haven't fought yet. I'm going to probably do it sometime this week. You have to fight Lady Emma. Now, that's like unexpected, right? And yeah. I looked up, like, not gameplay, but how difficult of a boss this person is. It's considered like one of the top 10 hardest bosses in that game, period.
Okay.
So she's not just some doctor. She's a fucking beast of a person. And if you do this, if you do kill Lady Emma and then go to do essentially what Al asked you to, you get infatuated with bloodlust, and then you kill Al, and then you just go on a killing spree. So it's known as the Path of Shura, where you're just filled with bloodlust, and then you just go on a killing spree to kill a bunch of other people. So that's right. That's the bad ending.
Right, is essentially siding with your master. Yeah. Well, not your master, your adopted dad.
Definitely this wasn't the intended ending, because right. The whole point of collecting all the items was to sever the immortality, and so now you're just saying, nah, fuck you, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right. Arguably, is this the shortest ending as well?
Yes. Yes, okay. The second, third, and fourth ending are much longer.
Right.
So with the second, third, and fourth ending, it's where you don't side with Owl, and then you follow Kuro. And so mm-hmm. with this ending, the second ending, which is what I got, this is what's considered the normal ending, not the true ending necessarily, just like what the standard ending is if you play it normally.
Right.
And you have to essentially collect one more item, where you have to collect dragon tears, and you have to motherfucking kill a dragon for it.
Right.
It's fucking nuts. It was such an awesome point in the game. It wasn't a hard boss. It was actually pretty easy, but it was fucking really cool.
Right. Very cinematic.
Yeah. And so when you do that, you come back and Kuro gets kidnapped again because he's such a fucking weakling.
That's the theme.
Yeah. By Genichiro. And so then you fight Genichiro one more time in Mortal Kombat.
Well, I mean, but doesn't he have like his great grandfather inside of him or something?
Oh, so you did you see a video on this?
No, I'm reading your notes.
Okay. So what happens is, so you, one of the items you collect is known as the Mortal Blade, and the Mortal Blade is what severs immortality, right? But right. With this blade, there's also its twin, the Black Mortal Blade. And that blade opens up the underworld. Okay.
Okay.
And so he has that black blade. And so you fight him, and with the black blade, he kills himself to resurrect his father, or his grandfather in his prime. Right. Because you find out later that Ashin Ishin later dies of old age and illness. And mm-hmm. so he goes to hell, essentially, because of his prior life. Like, he was a fuckface.
Well, okay, gotcha.
He wasn't a bad
also,
person.
Also, like, killing...
He killed a lot of people.
Bunches and bunches of people is probably bad.
Yeah. So, to give a little bit of backstory, he was a military leader who killed a lot of people, and his goal in life was only the way of the sword and how to make it better.
Right.
And so in the process, he killed so many people.
Think in a way, too, like, it was kind of like Owl in his prime was Sekiro, and then Ishin in his prime was Genichiro, in a way. Like, they're kind of following...
It's close. It's
the past of their relatives, in a
so
way.
So you would think Owl, but the closer one is Sekijo.
Mm.
Sekijo okay, yeah. was the... It was one-armed. Sekijo followed the path of the sword for many years, but then realized how terrible it was. He actually had right. a quote-unquote girlfriend. It never specifically said it, but she was also a shinobi known as Kingfisher.
Okay.
And she was the one that actually... She dies trying to collect one of the items for the Immortal Severance.
Right.
We don't know exactly how she got into this process of trying to prevent it, but that the prior Shinobi, Sekijo, and Kingfisher were also seemed to be part of another heir that was doing that process of trying to maybe sever the immortal, the immortality. We don't know, though. It's all speculation at that point. But she dies in the process, and then he becomes filled with grief and hatred, and that's why he becomes a sculptor.
Right.
And in the second ending, so here's the thing. If you defeat Genichiro and Ashina Ishin, the final boss,
right,
you sever Kuro by you killing him with the mortal blade, and then you become the sculptor. That's pretty fucking interesting, right? So
wait, so where is Sekijo?
He died. So one of the things, and I never got to this point, but one of the things you'll notice when you look at the house, it's filled with a lot of seals. So right. he followed the path of the Shura for a little bit. And when you follow the path of the Shura, you become a demon. The idea is that when you follow that path, you're becoming a demon.
Right.
And so he actually physically becomes a demon when he finds out that the finger whistle that you bring back was Kingfisher, the girl that he liked.
Okay.
And so his hatred for Ashina and I guess maybe forcing her to do that, we don't know for sure, fills him with so much hatred that he gets out of the house and becomes a devil. And then you have to fight him later if you want to. You don't have to, but you can.
He's just roaming around as a demon.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, pretty fucking nuts. And so, yeah, you become the sculptor, and then Lady Emma comes and sees you, and then you're like, well, perhaps the next shinobi that needs help, you'll be able to
mentor him as well. Yeah.
So it's a revolving cycle.
So with that, does Kuro die, or it just makes him
Kuro dies.
Mortal? Oh, so it's like a literally like you're
he, killing you, him. He with stabbed the shit blade. Out of him.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. In the third ending, it's the same thing. Essentially, you defeat the final boss, and then rather than killing him, you purify him, and then you kill yourself by committing seppuku because you are the last immortal, and you're severing the immortal lifeline by killing yourself. So that's the third ending. So not that great of an ending either.
But is that considered the good ending?
It's a better ending than the second one because this kid lives. But not that great because Sekiro dies. Now the true ending, the last ending, same thing, but you have to do a lot more bullshit. You probably have to follow a guide to get it. But essentially you have to collect a lot more items. And you have to do some tasks in order to find out that there is a way to sever the immortality without killing him. But what happens is that there is this child, this temple child that you meet, who is the the temple rejuvenation child or something like that, some bullshit. And so basically, you take Kuro, and she gets absorbed by the temple child, and so like they become one being, you could say. And so you then follow the temple child, and then you go on a journey west to find out the origin of the divine dragon, or essentially the heritage, because you realize that there may be more to the story than just what you've been experiencing. And so my speculation is that there are more immortals out there, because the origin of the divine heir and the dragon does not lie within the east, it lies within the west. And so that's my guess as to why. Now, I could be 100% wrong, but this is my belief that there may be a DLC coming for the game.
Interesting.
If you follow that ending. Yeah.
And you would consider that then the true ending.
That's like considered
where, the true where the game ending. Is supposed to go.
Yeah, because it gives you more to
right.
To
it's like there's through. More that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Elsewhere.
Yeah. And so that's the story. What do you think? Pretty cool, actually. Like pretty complicated. Just like a
yeah. Dark I think Souls it's pretty game. Cool.
Yeah.
I think.
It's just like a Dark Souls game for sure.
Well, I think in Dark Souls mainly there's like Yeah, there are like side stories that you can go on different ways, like by killing this person or not killing that person, etc. But ultimately, I think at the ending, there's really only two ways. One of maybe like two or three ways that things can go.
Like, isn't in Dark Souls 3, like at one point, you either become the king and then continue the...
Right, so that's the theme with every Dark Souls, is that you either end the cycle or you continue the cycle. Right. Like, you reignite the flame... Or you put out the flame,
right? So yeah, that's what it seems like. Like there's this either they need to continue severing the immortals, so essentially end the cycle, and that's what it seems like the DLC is. But yeah, that story, and I think it's a really good story. Definitely different from how Bloodborne and Dark Souls games usually do it. They usually give you a lackluster of information.
Right, those games tell story through items and other characters, and yeah.
Although this game does it as well. It also does the item thing.
Right, I think it to a way lesser degree, though.
Yeah, it's definitely more narrative.
Right, even when looking at the items and stuff like that, I feel like they give you less information than a Dark Souls game would give you, because some Dark Souls items have like two paragraphs of information you have to read. Right. And this game is more... I think in general, as we're going to be eventually moving into gameplay, I think a theme for this game in my mind is that they've solidified a lot of complex things down into being very straightforward. And I think, or at least more straightforward than past From Software games. And that includes like the story is we're going to have a better way to tell it. Also, items aren't going to be like these paragraphs of text that you have to go through each item to really learn what's going on.
I really hope they continue with the story.
It seems interesting. And so when did you get from any, I guess I'm assuming you watched a video or read up on the fourth ending, but from the fourth ending, when they're heading west, does that mean in Japan west or like in the world west?
I think it's Japan west. Because my belief is that a lot of this game, is involved in the mythology
of Japan,
and so it sticks with that. Now I could be wrong actually, because you do find out, because this is the Sengoku era. There are times where in real life that you were not colonized, but I guess. Sure, they were attempting to colonize Japan, the Portuguese and the Spaniards. And so one of the things that actually happens in the game, I don't know if you got this far, but there's an armored monster armored human in the game. He's known as the Armored Warrior. He's a mini boss. And one of the things he does when you kill him is he screams out Roberto! And this is like one of the few times you ever actually fight someone that's from the West. Like from Western culture,
from the far west,
very far. So it could be that the dragon, divine dragon, could be from Western culture. I mean, dragons could be Western as well. I mean, we hear it a lot in the Middle Ages, especially like these.
Well, I mean, just Dark Souls. There's always a dragon you gotta fight.
Yeah,
multiple dragons.
Yeah, whether or not it's Eastern or Western dragon is that something I'm not sure about. And we'll see maybe if there's a DLC or maybe even a Sekiro 2.
Right. Or even potentially we'll find out that like other cultures have way of making immortals as well.
Yeah. And in this game, there was a lot of different ways. There was things called like the rejuvenating waters, which was like artificial immortality, which is what Genichiro had, because you kill him.
Right.
Multiple times.
I guess. Yeah.
And he lives because of the rejuvenating waters. So anyways, like there's a lot still to be uncovered and see in the future.
Right. And I'm sure even there's going to be a lot more figured out about just the game in itself, but story-wise, about like what things connecting to each other. And also like similar with Dark Souls games, it took years to really get a fleshed out picture of each character's past, etc. So I'm assuming as people play the game and look for more stuff throughout like the next year or so, they're going to find out more about like Owl's past and Sekijo's past and flesh it out to a more extent.
Out there.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. Well, I think it's enough story, right? Let's move on to gameplay.
Let's go on to gameplay. Sounds good to me. So I'm going to start off.
Thank God.
By saying that, and I feel like part of the reason why you've been bringing up Bloodborne a couple of times is not only because that it's a different theme than Dark Souls, but also the gameplay is faster than Dark Souls, and it is in a way more like Bloodborne's gameplay, where there are no shields, there's nothing to hide behind. You can parry, and parry does work actually pretty well. But ultimately, it's like an action-adventure RPG, like, I guess, Dark Souls, but more like Bloodborne, I would say. You can level up your health, attack. It's all pretty much the basic stuff. The normal stuff you've been able to do before in terms of...
Except they definitely did reduce how much RPG elements actually affect the game.
Yes and no, because they have more RPG elements in the fact that you are able to have skill trees that you can upgrade.
Yes. So there are things like you can increase how much posture damage you do, how much...
Well, you also can learn new moves.
Yes.
Like you can upgrade along the shinobi path and you will have new shinobi moves that you can then execute in battle. And basically like increasing the amount of combos and skills you can use in battle, which is definitely something completely new for Souls-like games. You can never...
Right.
Increase the amount of abilities and moves you had. All you had was basically dependent on the weapon you were using.
Yeah, my point is to deviate from how the RPG is set up in Bloodborne and Dark Souls, where you actually had different skills you could level up. Like, oh, you can be a little bit faster, or oh, you can be a little bit stronger. Oh,
right. The stat system is kind of done away with.
Yeah, but yes, I 100% agree that the skill tree is RPG-like, and it really changes the way that this game plays as you attain more right. abilities.
And I think the reason why they needed this, not only because I think they wanted to mix things up and try new things, but I think one of the biggest disappointments about this game for me is that there is pretty much zero customization except for
skills.
Except for skills. And because they have these branching trees of abilities and skills, that serves some sort of... It kind of fills that need a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But because you cannot customize armor or weapons or anything like that besides your shinobi weapons or your prosthetic arm weapons, like they needed something. And I guess they went with the idea that we need to have these branching trees that players can improve upon as time goes on.
Yeah, one of the things, there was an interview with probably Miyazaki. I think he's the director or the head game designer for From Software. And so one of the things is like, yeah, we're trying to get rid of some of the customization. For example, there's not going to be any like customization cosplay. Like that's a thing in Dark Souls, even in Bloodborne, even. Like there is customization in what you wear. Albeit much less than Dark Souls.
Right. So in Dark Souls, let's say you wear leather armor. Like the difference between leather armor and chainmail is substantial. Like the amount of damage you'll take, the movement speed you have, etc. It affects gameplay on a high degree. In Bloodborne, it was to a lesser extent. Pretty much nothing really changed besides maybe resistances. And then
it gave you like one extra hit to survive or something like
right.
that.
Right. And then in Sekiro, there's nothing.
No.
Zero customization.
And I'm actually okay with it, maybe because I was introduced to Bloodborne, so I have a lesser extent of worrying about this.
Right.
But the reason why I'm okay with it is that it would actually take away, in my opinion, the narrative. Like the whole point is that you're trying to save Kuro in essentially a day.
Right.
And so there is no reason why you would be changing immediately or of that sort. And I mean, there is customization. There's a lot, especially with the prosthetic tools that you get in the game, mm-hmm. Especially the style of which ones you want to use. They had ones like you can use an umbrella, which can protect you from terror attacks. And it does like certain move sets. And then with like each item, like the loaded axe even, you can upgrade it to do different moves. So right. you get extra combos. So it is heavily combo based with what each item does.
So even if you were okay with this, I did not like this.
I get it.
I do not like the fact that you can't customize essentially your playstyle. You have to play Sekiro like everyone else is going to play Sekiro. And I understand why they did it. It totally makes sense why, especially because I think in a lot of ways this game they wanted to take Souls what they took something that is what made Dark Souls potentially as successful as it was they took combat and difficulty and put it into its own game, and they made mm-hmm. Sekiro. That's how I think of it, is that Sekiro is entirely about timings, understanding how your character moves, how far away you can attack from, understanding enemies. It's entirely based around that, like, gameplay.
Right. And I find it really fun. Like, the rhythm, it's like a rhythm game where you're timing kind of, yeah. each deflection. And, like, when you deflect attacks, you raise the opponent's posture, which allows you to do death blows against them.
Right.
And so you have to get that timing down. You see that they have certain abilities that you can't block, so you have to jump. Or if you can tell the difference between their thrust and their wide slash attack, you can do a counter to the thrust and do heavy posture damage. Like, these little subtle things that you have to keep track of in order to be good at the game, or at least defeat the opponent, is so fun to me, at least.
Yeah, if you actually get to a point where you're like mastering it, or feel like you're doing everything perfect in a battle, you feel like a shinobi badass samurai guy.
You feel like a fucking god.
100%. Yeah, you feel like you're the coolest thing since sliced bread. But
when you don't.
Well, yeah, when you don't, you get utterly shit on. But the thing that I get, the problem I have with this is that for me, half of Souls games was customization. Yes, the gameplay was fun and all, but half the fun for me was customization. And arguably, the fact that you can have different gameplay styles going through the game, when in Sekiro, it's not about the gameplay, it's about mastering the single type of gameplay they allow you to play.
Right.
Right. The single fighting style, you have to master that, and that's how you improve and continue the game. But in Dark Souls, or even Bloodborne in some extent, is that the weapon you choose to fight greatly and drastically affects how you will fight.
Yeah, that's true.
And that was always like a really cool part for me, especially because having done multiple playthroughs, or even just in a single playthrough, having to switch up my entire gear list from armor to weapon, etc., because I was in a new area, or because I was fighting a particular type of boss, or I was fighting a section of the game that was heavily like poison influenced, so I had to like remap who and how I was playing
mm-hmm.
in order to better suit the area. But definitely in Sekiro, it's like, nope, you just gotta have to deal with everything by your sword and deflecting shit.
Yeah, for the most part, this game is mainly learning how to deflect and parry attacks. More or less.
Yeah.
That's the main point of the game. You can go and extend yourself beyond that if you'd like, using your prosthetic tools. So, for example, one of the bosses becomes a lot easier to beat if you have Sabimaru, which is basically a short sword that does really quick combos. And you can actually combo that with your long sword as well if you get the abilities with it. And so you can defeat certain bosses a lot more easily. There's stuff like the guardian ape that you have to fight that becomes an apparition, and it's a fuckface of a boss, by the way. When you fight him, he is actually weak against the umbrella. Like, it helps you protect against terror buildup, and so then you can do damage to him if you have that ability. So there are items in the game with the prosthetic that allows you to do more things, more versatility.
Right.
But yes, I agree. You could play this game, and what I mostly did this is just deflecting and attacking.
Yeah. Which is fine. I think it's really, it shows in a way the epitome of the gameplay, evolution of Souls games, right? We went from like Dark Souls, Dark Souls 1, and Bloodborne was definitely a step in the quicker, faster gameplay direction. And then Dark Souls 3 was even faster than the previous Dark Souls games. And then Sekiro was sort of the epitome of that type of gameplay. Sekiro is like the epitome of fast reaction times, timing, mastering a mechanics in a game is Sekiro for me.
Yeah, this is definitely the best, what would you call it, action game? I don't know, that part. This is definitely the funnest gameplay I've played. Definitely not the best customization, if maybe
right.
we can agree
like
on
the
that.
Gameplay is really rewarding when you're doing it well, 100%. Yeah. But for me, I just felt like half of Souls-like games for me was customization.
I think this would be fun to see in the future when they do a different IP, because I know they're done with Dark Souls, essentially. They right. want to do other stuff. It'd be fun to mix that customization together with Sekiro
and maybe some other mechanics. With the type of gameplay, yeah.
Yeah, you know... Basically, Dark Souls with Sekiro gameplay. I think that would be interesting. And, you know, add a few more things, obviously, because you don't want to just copy-paste. Right. But, I think
one other thing that we haven't really talked about, too, is that Sekiro is also kind of a stealth game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's if you don't stealth, it's a motherfucking bitch of a fight to kill all the mobs. Because this game definitely has a lot of enemies in the game. And one of the nice things is they set it up in such a way that with timing and stealthiness, you can kill them and pick them off in order to make your, I guess, movement into the game much easier.
Right. Navigating areas becomes a lot easier when you take stealth into consideration. And you can get it basically to a point where you're never fighting more than two mobs at a time.
Yeah. I did, by the way, try without stealth. And the only way I was able to do it was in my second playthrough because you actually have a shit ton of health. So now you can
right,
do it.
Compared to the beginning.
Yeah,
right.
So now you can do it. But it is fucking hard as shit still.
Right. Especially when you activate like a mini boss surrounding a bunch of mobs.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah.
So who was your hardest boss, Quinn? Was it Genichiro?
I think it was Genichiro, for sure. And I think this is, like, not to say that the boss fight is what made me stop the game, but Chase did complete the game and I didn't. And I think it was also just this happens to me a lot, is if I don't play a game for a while, I just kind of drop it.
I dropped it for a while as well.
Right, until you were like, I'm just going to go finish it.
Yeah.
And
then this is only because another podcast I listened to was like, hey, we're about to play this. And I'm like... fuck yeah, I'm gonna beat the shit out of it because you guys can't beat fucking any game.
Right.
They couldn't beat Cuphead.
Chase just wanted to feel good about himself.
I beat Cuphead too. Yeah. I'm good.
So basically, I think the problem I was having was Genichiro was not as bad as we make it sound, I feel like. I think, yeah, his second form was the biggest pain in the ass for me.
Yeah, his first and second are really similar, but it's just the fact that you have to fight it a second time. Just
right, and you're basically like down on health and on those divine blessings or whatever they're called.
So
like you're down on resources.
Yeah. Yeah, and then by the time you get to the third form, you're already out of resources.
Right, so you're pretty much bare bones.
Yeah,
at that point.
But if you compare his third form, it's actually easier than his second and first. And the big reason why is because he starts using electrical abilities.
You just deflect it.
You don't deflect it necessarily. Well, sure, you call it deflection, but it's called like the lightning reversal technique or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the ability that if you get hit with a lightning attack, you as long as you press the R1 button when you're about to hit the ground, so you have to be in the air when you get hit by the lightning attack,
right.
You defuse it and then it attacks them.
Right.
So it's actually really easy to time.
Oh, so it was I kept pressing deflect, but it's, yeah, you have to attack. Oh.
Yeah, so that's why it was confusing. So first of all, if you jump in the air and press L1, you fuck it up. You right. have to be hit and then press R1 before you land.
To deflect, to throw the lightning somewhere else. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that's probably why I kept losing.
Yeah, then it becomes a lot easier because now that ability doesn't mean shit.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering if you have to learn it still, or is just automatically something that you have?
No, it popped up on my screen. But I thought it was, I thought because it said like deflection that I was like supposed to press L1.
It's confusing. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe because it just makes more sense that it should be a deflection, maybe because of our nature. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the nature of the move is to deflect it, quote unquote. So I guess deflecting, you know, it is a huge part.
It's because we're about to get hit. So you normally think like when you get hit, you want to deflect. So that has to be it.
Anyways, yeah, like I thought, like definitely, at least up until that point, there wasn't a section that felt not doable. But
doable.
Very difficult, and obviously, okay, if I put enough time into this, I'm gonna get through it.
You fought Lady Butterfly, correct?
Yes. Yeah,
and she was pretty hard too.
Yeah, she was pretty hard. But that was, I don't know, that was really rewarding.
Yeah,
that felt good. But during the fight, and during, not necessarily during Genichiro, but during Lady Butterfly, I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I had other weapons to fight this boss with? Because I've been like, once you start fighting a boss for an hour or more, you're just like, I want something. I want to do something else. Like, I want there to, not necessarily I want to play a different game or whatever, but I want there to be another tactic I can use besides like being getting better. Good. Yeah. Like, I want there to be other branches I can get good at instead of this single branch that I have to keep beating my head against the wall with.
Yeah. So one of those battles for me was the final boss in the game. I probably spent 5 hours, I think, total. Jeez. Just fighting the boss.
Jeez.
Probably 100 deaths. And the reason why it was so hard is because he has 4 phases.
Right.
First phase being Genichiro one more time.
Right.
And the good thing is, actually, when I fought Genichiro, I beat him on my first try. I didn't even, And the reason is because he has the same moveset, more or less, as in the battle that you fight on top of Ashina Castle.
Right. And you've already fought that battle. Yeah.
And so it's like ingrained into your, into your body. And so I didn't have any issues with that. Even though I was like, oh, fuck, he's going to be so much more difficult. But for some reason, my body was just used to it. Anyways.
You're already muscle memoried that fight. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I muscle memoried this fight as well.
After 5 hours, you better have.
And so, like, when you fight Isshin, he is fast. And that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult, is because you have to split second decide, is he going to do a thrust attack? Is he going to do a swiping attack? Because when he does a swipe, you have to jump, and you'll notice later that there's like certain patterns that the guy does that makes you figure out which one's which,
right?
But they look so fucking similar.
Right.
And so because he has 3 more phases after Genichiro, you finally get to and each phase is different, by the way. His third phase, not his final, but his third phase, considering the first one being Genichiro, he takes out a fucking halberd or whatever the hell. I think it's called a kodachi or an, I don't know.
Oh,
it's
a huge
long ass.
The Japanese version, yeah.
Yeah. And so that thing's a fuck fest in itself because the timing is vastly different. So you go from a really fast timing to a slower timing.
Right. Well, especially since if you've been training on the first timings and then this new form is completely different, you're basically fucked all over again.
Yeah. And so that's a fuck fest in itself. So his final form is the easiest one because he starts using electrical abilities. Mm. And so you just jump and then...
You just do the same thing over and over, yeah.
So that's why I'm like, oh, this is... Once I get... This is why like I was texting you over the hours I was fighting. Like, once I get to this final phase, it'll be fucking easy. And I remember, Quinn, I was so close to beating it one time. I just had to hit him one more time to get his posture damage to rise up.
Mm-hmm.
And I choked so hard.
Oh,
the dick was too big for me, Quinn.
Lord.
Anyways, yeah, so definitely the hardest boss in the game was the final boss, just like all the other Dark Souls games, more or less.
Yeah. I do remember, though, I recall you having And I think even me at some points, finding out what to do and where to go next. And I guess we could talk about that in terms of pacing and level design a little bit. And I felt like there were some, unless you were really searching everywhere, you could arguably get stuck.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you fight the same boss over and over, you're going to forget things.
That's very true.
I got stuck until I don't think I actually looked up a guide. I did look up it, and I didn't get it. I was like, where the fuck do I go? And so I remember you telling me that it was like there was some place in the Sunken Valley to go further down. There's some place where you get shot by a bunch of guns. And that's
That was super annoying.
Yeah, really fucking pain in the ass. And so if you get to that point, then you actually continue on with the story. And then you actually fight the Guardian Ape, etc. So that was the next spot in the game.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because I got all the way to that, even though I wasn't fighting. I didn't beat Genichiro yet.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that would work.
Yeah, like how far into the game you can go without fighting Genichiro.
Because you are prevented at one point. So I don't know if you ever went to the temple. Because you can go to the temple, the Senkoku temple or something like that, where you fight monkeys. The boss is monkeys. You fight monks. You fight a bunch of monks. Did you fight monks at all?
The fallen monks?
Yeah. Did you ever fight those people?
No, I didn't. I don't think I got there.
Okay, so if you can get up to the point where you need a bell, which you have to get from Kuro. So, I mean, in the end, you are being...
Oh, you do need to... That's the point in which you're blocked. I got it.
Yeah. So, there are... So, I don't know where it is for the ape, but yeah. And it's too late. I already... Going through this playthrough, I beat... my second playthrough, I already beat the shit out of Genichiro. So, I didn't actually go... Further down.
Well, at that point, when you have so much health.
Yeah. And you have 3 revives now.
Right.
So
and you do more damage.
Yeah. You do a lot more posture damage, which makes it a lot easier.
They should just make you taller, too. Just to add a little bit of oomph.
All right. Do you think we're good with gameplay?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much answered. It's everything. Pretty... We explained a lot, so I think we did good.
There's still room for you to learn more.
Yeah, there's nuances beyond belief, and there's like a whole bunch of other stuff, and we could talk about like items and how you can go buy specific items from different merchants, etc. But you can figure that out later or not play the game. But we'll talk about sound now.
So, did you listen to it in Japanese or English?
Japanese.
Yeah, and so it actually tells you like you should listen to this in Japanese. So, yeah, almost seems like a fuck face. Like, hey, they have these English actors that did it.
Right.
And they're like, no, 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 no. You're going to listen to it in Japanese.
You've got to listen to the weeb version.
And actually, I listened to a little bit of the English compared to the Japanese. The Japanese does sound better, honestly.
No, I figured it would. And it does sound really good.
Yeah, the voices are incredible. I love Sekiro and Genichiro's voice.
Mm.
Sekiro is like, you feel like he's been through shit with his voice. Like, his voice sounds like a voice that's been through shit.
Yeah, he's kind of he's not very emotive, like very like shit. Those are shit. Like he's kind of like deep, quiet voice in a way.
Yeah, and then Genichiro is a little bit of the opposite.
Yeah,
where he's much louder, much prouder.
He's got something to prove. Yeah.
And then Ishin, which you didn't get a chance to see him, I don't think. But if you do see him, his voice is awesome. He looks like he's like a samurai showdown antagonist voice, like. Awesome, and you get excited when you hear it.
You get excited when he beats your ass for 5 hours.
Yeah, like he always tells me that hesitation is defeat every fucking time I fight him. I'm like, you motherfucker,
stop hesitating.
Yeah, so for the most part in this game, the sounds are great, but you are reading subtitles a lot in this game, and it's fine. The voices are incredible, even if it's in a different language.
Yeah, they're really well done. And I think also just sounds of like monsters and enemies are also really well done as well. Yeah.
The music is really good. The sounds are great. The deflection, really the parrying. But the music, I will say, isn't like other games where, I guess you can say these ones are atmospheric for the most part. I mean, you can hear it. Like, it's not atmospheric to the point where you don't hear the music, but it's like it's mostly instrumental. There's some voices, but there's no like singing of any form. And it's they use like the Japanese flute or something like that.
Right. And I think it has a very Eastern style. Is more to add it, instead of detract from the game itself. I think it's like more subtle background.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely during like boss fights and stuff, the music definitely changes to more like battle music stuff. It feels like, in a way, what you have to think about is they've had almost like a decade of experience working on games like this, and I think they've really gotten to a point where they're doing like it's, they're not going to do bad, right? Like, they're always going to be doing good or better. Mm-hmm. And I think the battle music definitely is super solid, and the background like ambiance is also really good.
Yeah, I agree. Anything else you want to add to sound? Because I mean, I know it's a little bit shorter, but it's just, I mean,
I think just adding on to, yeah, like combat sounds are really good. Like weapons clashing against each other is awesome.
It felt good. Yeah,
it's basically like you were kind of saying, it's like a samurai movie or something, even though like Hollywood overdoes the sound of metal clashing together. But the game sort of does the same thing and makes it really dramatic and makes it this experience. You're kind of like, as you're playing, you're also watching this samurai battle take place, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking cool to watch.
Yeah, it can be really awesome, especially at the end where you do a dramatic finisher where you like just slice their head off or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on to replayability. You have more experience with this, so what do you feel about it, Chase?
So, I mean, the replayability is good. I mean, it's not amazing in terms of like a Dark Souls game, he's like, okay, I can go with a completely different outfit now,
right,
or something, a different style. So it's not in that point, but what makes it fun is that there are more endings to this, and you're most likely, unless you're actually reading a guide, you're probably not going to get the true ending. It's just very unlikely.
There's too many obscure things you have to complete.
Yeah, it's possible to find. I'm not saying, like, I actually found some of the stuff for the true ending, but I needed to do a few more things in order to finish it. Because I know, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, I didn't go that far into certain spots or something like that.
Well, another thing I want to kind of mention too, Arius, like, I don't know if you have any information on this, but in previous Souls games, additional playthroughs, like New Game Plus, would actually have more story information.
Oh, really?
There would be new characters added and new enemies added that would give you different items that you couldn't obtain any other way.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. I'm actually looking up if the second playthrough of Sekiro makes the enemies more difficult.
Hmm. Yeah, because that's definitely a theme through all the Souls-like games as well, is that as you play the game more and do more playthroughs, enemies get a little bit more health and do a little bit more damage.
Yeah, enemies do more damage. They take more posture from you. So I was wondering why they were doing more damage to me. I noticed that a little bit. I mean, it wasn't to the extent... It's just like like Bloodborne when you go through the second playthrough. Or even Dark Souls. Like, you're just so much stronger.
Yeah.
That it's...
And
that
you're just more experienced, yeah, too. So the whole intro of the game is no longer a scary thing. It's like, all right, I can be hit a couple times. It's no big deal. I have 3 revives. No big deal.
You know, one of the things you can do to make this game even harder, there's this charm that you can pick up at the start of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to read it through. Basically, you will receive damage when you block attacks.
Ooh.
So it's not a lot, but yeah, that makes it so much fucking harder.
Right. Is that even if you do really well, you're taking damage. So you have to go even faster. You can't just
to deflect better. You have to actually get your deflections. Because blocking's a bitch. You usually don't get damaged for it. But yeah, so it's you can make this game much more of a fucking nightmare. I know there's a bell that gives like the enemies more health and do more damage to you. That you ring. And so, yeah, you can make this game as hard as fuck.
It already is pretty hard.
Yeah. Honestly,
I feel to me, this was a lot harder than Dark Souls 3
and
Dark Souls 2. And
it's like the hardest game I've played.
Yeah. It's a step up. Because I think in addition to that is definitely due to the customization aspect. is that you can't find like your specific playstyle. But yeah, I imagine, I wonder also, because you aren't able to switch your playstyle, if the game continue like grows more samey, you know, like it gets a little bit boring as you're essentially the same mechanic is used for more and more hundreds of hours, arguably.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in the game, I'm sure you're not going to have a whole lot more to unlock.
Yeah, but the only thing for so the replayability isn't the strongest suit here. I think that where it's fun is that there's more lore to uncover. Just right. Like any Dark Souls game, it has that type of aspect. And there are trophies that you can get, like collecting prayer beads, getting memories, make your attack power stronger. So there's a trophy for maximizing those things. And because the game becomes a lot easier when you get all that health and attack power,
right?
It's actually quite fun to go through and fight the bosses. It's so much fucking easier now.
It also probably gives you that rewarding feeling a lot faster.
Yeah. You're like, oh, this is not as bad now.
I am a badass samurai guy.
Yeah. I went through all the bullshit to get to this point. I deserve to be.
Right. Also that, oh my god, that navigating that tower to get to Genichiro the first time was such a pain in the ass. And I bet like having more health would make it so much better. Those people that just fly from the sky and throw shit at you all the time, my god.
Yeah, they did a fuck ton of damage, and it was really such a pain.
You could get one shot on your first playthrough.
Yeah, now I can take a different route now because of this to get to the top floor. Like, I can just go straight now rather than just going to the sides, picking off people one by one. Now I can just like go through and just easily just beat the shit out of them, and it's not as bad. I mean, still difficult when there's three of them. They're really hard.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and multiple enemies in this game can become really rough, regardless of what they are.
Exactly. Like, yeah, even the peons are fucking pain. But yeah, I think it has some good replayability value outside of just one.
Cool.
Okay. So yeah, going to the conclusion of this game, I think it is a wonderful game. Definitely one of my favorite games of all time. But definitely this game is not suited for everyone. You have to be a masochist.
Right.
So I recommend playing other Soulsborne games in the series before playing this one. Because then those ones are a little bit easier. Maybe arguably better in some ways. Because maybe you like customization more. But definitely the story is better in this game than any other in the series, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say something similar. Like, I don't think I would not recommend this game to just if anyone came up to me and was like, hey, should I get Sekiro? I'd probably say no. It's a really well done game. But like you kind of said, it's for a specific type of person. If you've played all the Souls games and you've beaten them all on New Game Plus and all that, and you are really dedicated to that difficulty style and mastering the gameplay, then maybe it's for you. But
you know what's sad, though? 25% of Steam players have beaten this game, at least.
Really?
Yeah, that's really high, don't you think, for 3.8 million copies sold? I mean, I guess those don't include Steam.
Right, those aren't solely Steam. But also, there's probably a lot of copies, not enough to make a dramatic difference in this, but I'm sure there's a lot of copies that haven't even been played. That are just sitting in people's libraries.
So just think about that, though. Let's assume 4 million have been sold. That means a million people were good enough to beat this game. And honestly,
no, at max. That's what I'm saying, is that it's probably more likely that it's like 500,000 people beat this game, or even less. But that, that's surprising. I'm surprised. Are you? So it said 25%, not 2.5%.
No, it said 23.9% for one of the trophies, and there were other trophies. So there's four trophies you can get for the endings.
Right.
And so it was 23.6 for the normal ending. So I was like, so probably about 25% on Steam were able to beat this game.
Have gotten a ending.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, fuck. I, cause you know what's lower? Cuphead has 13.6 to beat the game.
Right. And I would think that even Souls games are probably around that, maybe even lower than Sekiro as well. But the weird thing is, too, is that, yeah, you because you listen to that other podcast, right? And there's three of them, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to drop that percentage.
Yeah, will they finish?
Are you the you're the one out of four of those people? But the thing is, I haven't beat the game, but I guess maybe I will. Who knows? That's you're one out of five.
Damn. Yeah, well, it's it's fucking hard. This is a really fucking hard game, and I'm not. If good luck, guys. Good luck, listeners who out there who listen to this someday.
If you're gonna play this game, tread lightly. It's gonna be rough.
Yeah.
Use the stealth.
On that note, thank you for listening to the podcast, guys. Thank you for listening to our episode of Sekiro, the second Shadow Dying review. If you want to get a hold of us, go on Twitter and give us your opinions about this wonderful game, or maybe horrible experience for you, at BS Gamers Podcast, because I would love to talk to you guys about this. This game was so fun for me, and I want to see if there are other people who survived the onslaught. But Quinn,
where are the 23.9% out there, you know?
Quinn, what could they do even better for us?
If you liked this review and you want to express that to us, you can do so, like Chase mentioned, on Twitter. But you could also go a step further and review us on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on. And that'd be greatly appreciated. Like we've said before, if you're looking to leave a bad review, please consider tweeting us on Twitter the things we can improve before leaving that review, and we'll work on improving those said things. And maybe after that, you can leave a positive review.
Please do. We're small podcast guys. We want to grow. We're trying, and we need you guys out there to feel for us.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Yeah, see you guys later.